who was the bridegroom. And that means Nanda must take the bull and go with the Buddha to the monastery. And Nanda had so much respect for the Buddha that he did not dare to refuse. So he had to pick up the bull and go after the Buddha. So when the people saw this, they reported it to the bride, the princess. So the princess, with her hair half done, opened the window and looked and saw the prince following the Buddha. So she said, "Oh Lord Prince, come back soon." But when they reached the monastery, Buddha asked Nanda whether he would not want to ordain on the wedding day. But Nanda did not dare to say, "I don't want to ordain." So he said yes. So he was ordained. But he was not happy. He was not glad. So one day he could not bear it any longer and he told it to other monks. "So I'm not happy in the life of a monk, so I will go back to lay life." So it was reported to the Buddha. So the Buddha, by some means, convinced him of the futility of being attached to sounds and so on. And so he practiced meditation, maybe this mindfulness meditation, ardently with the singleness of Baba, and so in the end he became an arahant. But before he became an arahant, it is said in the books that that voice of the princess entered his heart and stayed there like an arrow. He could not take it out. He was thinking of that voice again and again, and he could not practice Dhamma. He could not be clad in the life of a monk. And so only after the Buddha talked to him that he came to realize that it was nothing, and he practiced meditation and became an arahant. So when the princess said to him, "Oh Prince Lord, come back soon," he did not apply mindfulness. So he took that voice to be attractive, to be agreeable, and so he could not practice Dhamma. So mindfulness is lost to him who, having heard a sound, reflects upon the sign of beauty. Being of mind filled with attachment, he enjoys it and dwells following it. To such a person, diverse feelings dependent upon the sound multiply. So good sensations, bad sensations, or pleasant sensations, unpleasant sensations, or otherwise. Covetousness and aversion torment his mind. To him who thus accumulates karma formation, suffering arises. For such a person, Nirvana is said to be far away. On the bright side, having heard the sound, he who, having heard the sound, is mindful immediately afterward, is not attached to the sound. He experiences it with mind unattached and dwells not following it. To him who thus observes visible objects and experiences feelings, defilements disappear, they do not increase. Thus he dwells with mindfulness. For him who does not accumulate karma formation, suffering does not arise. For such a person, Nirvana is said to be close at hand. So like yogis who apply mindfulness when they hear something, a person cannot have attachment to sound, whether it is a sound of a bird or sound of a dear person. When one applies mindfulness, one just stop there and not go over to deciding whether it is agreeable or beautiful or not. And so one cannot have attachment. So when you pay close attention to what you hear, you will be able to stop at just what is heard and not go over to liking it or disliking it. When you go over to liking and disliking it, you accumulate karma formation, and so there will be suffering, then you'll be far from nirvana. But you see, if you apply mindfulness and can stop just at hearing and not have covetousness or aversion, then you do not accumulate karma formation. If you do not accumulate karma formation, suffering will not arise on you, suffering will not increase, and so you are near Nibbana. The same with smell, taste, tangible objects, and Dhamma objects. Now, when a person smells a scent, and if he does not apply mindfulness, if he is not mindful, then he will be attached to it, and so he will experience it with attachment, and he will enjoy it, and so covetousness and aversion will torment his mind, and so on. The same with taste of food. Yogis have to be very careful about food also, because food or eating is one place where one can have attachment very easily. People like good food. They prepare good food or exotic food, and they want to eat good food whenever they can, and that is why there are many restaurants, like Chinese restaurants, Indian food or Thai cuisine, and so on. So if you do not apply mindfulness when eating, then you will be attached to food. And when there is attachment, the covetousness, aversion, and so on will also come to you, and you will be accumulating karma formation. When you apply mindfulness, then there is no chance for attachment or aversion to come to you. So when you eat, you are mindful of eating. So when you apply mindfulness, when you eat, you say seeing, touching, bringing, and all these things. But those are not with regard to food or to taste. Those are with regard to seeing, touching, and so on. But when you put the food in the mouth, chew it, and then you begin to experience taste, then you may be attached to that taste, or you may not. So if you do not apply mindfulness, then you will be attached to that taste. And if you apply mindfulness, say just, if it is good, just say good, good. If it is bad, you say just bad, bad. Then attachment has no chance to get into your mind. So, with regard to eating also, yogis have to be very careful and not let attachment or aversion enter their mind. And monks are especially trained to eat food with proper reflection or with the sense of loathsomeness of food. And so sometimes there is a problem, because lay people want to prepare good food or delicious food and offer to the monks. And they want monks to enjoy that food. They prepare good food, tasty food, and they want monks to enjoy. And some lay people are not blessed when they know monks eat with this reflection, or monks eat with the sense of loathsomeness of the food, and so on. But we cannot help. So a layman may prepare the best food he can to offer to the monks, and this is his part of doing. But the monks must not eat it with attachment, not eat it with relish. So they must, if they are the true follower of the Buddha, then they must eat with proper reflection, or eat with the sense of loathsomeness of the food. Otherwise, they will get attachment and suffering will follow. So when at one of my retreats, a person who offers food to me, he always said, when you offer food to me, he said, enjoy the breakfast or enjoy the lunch. So I was uncomfortable when he said this. Because we are not supposed to enjoy. So mindfulness is lost to him, having tasted the taste to reflect upon the sign of beauty and so on. So with tangible objects also, when we have a good touch, we need to apply mindfulness. When we have a bad touch also, we need to apply mindfulness so that we don't get attachment or aversion. And also with regard to Dhamma objects, as I said yesterday, the word is difficult to translate. So Dhamma object means any object you can think of with your mind. So sometimes yogis are so carried away by their thoughts that they forgot to apply mindfulness. And then they said, it's so tempting and it's difficult to give up thinking that thought. So that is having cognized a Dhamma object. They reflect upon the sign of beauty, because it is good. It feels good to think that way. And if they take the sign of beauty, then attachment and others will come in. So when you have thought, very good thought, it is a very tempting thought, just apply mindfulness and just say thinking, and let them go away. If you attach to these thoughts, then attachment, and then sometimes aversion will come, and so you accumulate karma formations, which will increase your suffering. Now, when Malunga Buddha told Buddha how he understood the Buddha's teachings in these verses, Buddha was glad, and so Buddha accepted, or Buddha agreed with what he said. So at the end of the verses, Malunga Buddha said, indeed Lord, I understand in full the meaning of what the Blessed One has spoken in brief. Then Buddha said, well said, Malunga Buddha. Well indeed do you understand in full the meaning of what I have spoken in brief. And then Buddha repeated these 24 verses. So that means Buddha agreed with what Malunga Buddha said, and so he accepted these verses as his own teaching. And so we can take these verses as spoken by the Buddha. At the end of this sutta, what do you think Malunga Buddha did? Formerly he was a confused person, but now he was not. So Buddha said, that is how Malunga Buddha, you should understand in full the meaning of what I have said in brief. Thereupon the venerable Malunga Buddha was pleased with and praised what was said by the Blessed One. And he rose from his seat, paid respect to the Blessed One, circled him three times, keeping him on his right side, and departed. So he was pleased. He paid homage to the Buddha, and as was the custom in those days, he circled the Buddha three times, keeping the Buddha on his right, and then departed. He did not say anything to the Buddha that he would practice meditation, but after some time he practiced. So then the venerable Malunga Buddha, dwelling alone, secluded, mindful, with energy that dissipates defilement, with mind directed towards enlightenment, in no long time knew, realized, and fulfilled for himself in this very life that goal for which clansmen rightly leave home for the homeless life, and which is unsurpassed and the end result of holy life. In the beginning he said, please teach me something so that I may dwell alone, secluded, mindful, and with energy that dissipates defilement, with mind directed towards enlightenment, practice Dhamma. So after the teaching, he did not say anything, or it is not recorded that he said anything, but he went away, and later on he practiced meditation. And when he practiced meditation, he practiced alone and secluded and mindful, with energy that dissipates defilement, and with mind directed towards enlightenment. That means he practiced diligently, and he practiced alone, and he practiced at a secluded place, and with full energy. In no long time, Mu realized and fulfilled for himself in this very life that goal for which clansmen rightly leave home for the homeless life. So that means not long after he practiced Dhamma, he realized the goal, he reached the goal, that goal for which clansmen rightly leave home for the homeless life. That means many people became recluses of monks for that goal. And so that goal he reached in that very life, not long after he began practicing meditation. So he was successful, and he realized the truth. And he knew, exhausted is rebirth, lived is the holy life, done is the task. There is no more task for the extinguishing of defilement. That is how he knew. That means he became an arahant. When he knew, exhausted is rebirth, there is no more rebirth for me, and I have lived this holy life, I have done what is to be done, and there is no more task to be done for the extinguishing of defilement. That means he has become an arahant. Therefore, the Soda ends with this statement, and the Venerable Malankya Buddha was yet another of the arahants. So he became an arahant at the end. So this sutta was beneficial for Malankya Buddha, and also for those who later read this sutta and practiced according to the teachings in this sutta. This sutta is very short, and the instruction for meditation is very brief, but they are to the point, and they have to be understood according to the teachings given in other suttas. So in this sutta, Buddha taught the Satipatthana Vipassana meditation, or just mindfulness meditation. And Buddha meant to say that mindfulness is an important factor in this practice of meditation. And if you apply mindfulness to whatever you experience, you are close to Nibbana. You will not accumulate karma formation. You will not have covetousness or aversion or delusion with regard to the objects if you apply mindfulness. If you apply mindfulness immediately after you have seen, heard, smelled, and so on. So this sutta teaches us to be mindful of everything, so that we are able to stop just at seeing, at hearing, and so on, and not go over into taking the objects as beautiful and being attached to them and accumulate karma formations and increase suffering or dukkha. We are fortunate that we have these teachings, and we are now following these teachings, or applying these teachings to our meditation. And so, who knows, all of us, or any of us, or one of us, may become enlightened in this very life. In no long time. Or if we do not yet reach that stage, we should try, we should put forth effort to reach that goal or to reach that stage. Thank you very much. This retreat will end 3 p.m. tomorrow. So the morning schedule will be the same. But afternoon, between 12 and 1, please help in the kitchen to clean it up. And between 1 and 2, you may clean your room, change sheets, and you may look around the place. And at 2, we will sit until 3 o'clock. And after a few words of closing, the retreat will come to an end.